Lidice, L-I-D-I-C-E, or what was once Lidice. This was a town destroyed by the Germans in retaliation for the assassination of Heinrich the Hangman. Every man was killed and every child given to the Germans, while the women were sent to concentration camps. Now there is nothing but rubble and graves and a monument. But volunteers and the few women who have returned are starting to build it anew. After visiting Lidice, it becomes obvious as to why anything that suggests fascism is so hated. If communism takes a similar trend, it can never survive. May 30th, Prague. It is said here that Dorothy Thompson came to Prague, spent the day in her hotel room, and wrote authoritatively about Czechoslovakia. They say this is a frequent occurrence, and this is the source of the so-called sound information that we feed on. For instance, the stories of blood, the stories of bloodshed and violence following the communist coup are utter fantastic untruths, according to capable non-political figures in Prague. But very often, headline-hungry journalists make a street fight a revolution. I dislike hasty judgment and therefore will not commit myself to a positive statement about the political conditions in the Eastern Sphere, but rather will record only personal experiences and explanations pro and con. Prague is a beautiful city, and the people seem extremely hospitable and do not seem to be anti-American. In conversations with about 15 different Czechs, including the taxi driver, head waiter, bus driver, office clerks, an attorney, a doctor, an accountant, and others, I learned that there is a great fear for future security. Some fear stems from the manner in which the present government has forced itself into power. Other fears do not relate directly to the local political situation, but to the possibility of another war. Remembering Lidice as an example of German atrocities in the past war, there is adequate reason for their present state of mind. Going back to the first source of insecurity, the techniques of the present government, we must remember that the majority of people were not communists in the last elections. But the February events resulted from high pressure, intimidation through labor union action committees, resulting in the awful fact that a worker is either a communist or he is no longer on the lists of the employed. That this has basis in fact, I only know from conversation. Now, in order to stabilize the economy, one that suffers from a food shortage and dollar shortage, the communist government has invoked rigid controls with regard to export and imports, food rationing, elimination of black markets, and emigration of labor. These controls are severe, but efficient and seemingly effective. And we should know that any such controls, in order to work well, can do so only if the fear of God is in the hearts of the people. Thus, everyone seems afraid. And any conversation concerning black market or the government is carried on only in locked rooms and with low voices. The desire of most people to operate outside these restrictions is natural to expect, and they therefore create for themselves a state of hysteria to the extent that these people suspect that they are being watched and chance being blacklisted, actually almost to the state of paranoia. The justification for this is probably not completely sound, because even I, who did a little angling, fell into that state, at least partially, but found that departure customs were more lenient than any I've experienced to date. Evidently, I wasn't being tailed. Second main source of fear, that is the war, would exist under any government, since every Czech is convinced, and rightly so, that any major war must involve them because of their vulnerable Central European position. There are more favorable points to consider, however. In spite of the great shortage of food, there is still equal distribution, the black market being almost completely controlled, except for foreigners, that is. The laborer is probably better off from a nourishment point of view than in France and Italy, where food is much more abundant. The availability of education and the cultural arts are doubtlessly greater than anything I've seen elsewhere. Not only are tuition fees paid, but living allowance is available. The concert halls are cheap, performances frequent and encouraged. But it must be remembered that all of this is not new. In fact, state medicine has been in effect for some time here and is becoming more and more frequent even in non-communist countries. Their connection with Russia is obvious. The Russians liberated Prague and treated the people with kid gloves. Since then, Stalin's picture is as frequently seen as their own president's. Actually, they are seen more often in shops and windows side by side. This is an important factor. In addition, Czech language is more closely related to Russian than to our own. Language barrier is an extremely important deterrent. Even more potent is the approximation of borders between Czech and the communist states of Eastern Europe. To underestimate any of these factors would be ignoring some of the basis of our close connections to England. So it is logical to expect that just as England's future is so tightly intertwined with ours, Czechoslovakia must stand or fall with Russia, unless some substitute for spheres of influence is to be found. The Czechoslovakian elections are over. Wait, this is May 30th. Czechoslovakian elections are over, and the results are just as predicted. 89% for and 11% against the present government. The figures speak for themselves. Is it possible that 89% of any group can agree on government policy? The obvious answer is that they cannot, unless there be some deeper driving force, like fear. In my short stay in this beautiful country, on only one point did I become assured, that the people are frightened. This is not an isolated condition of any single class or group. It was the same feeling voiced in confidence by people from all walks of life. Not only was their fear talked about in private conversation, but it was apparent in the manner and expression and caution by which all of the people with whom I spoke conducted themselves. The important question now is, what has caused this state of mind that is so general? Many observers might lightly blame it on distrust in communism. It is not as simple as that, however. First, the man in the street fears war. Second, he fears tactics which are in any way similar to those so familiar under Nazism. After visiting Lidice, these anxieties are readily understandable. We must remember that this country divides East and West. In the event of war, the occupation of Czechoslovakia by Russia will be a matter of course. And with world events, what they are today, these people feel that there is no hope of avoiding world conflict, of averting world conflict. In this event, they will be subjected to the nightmare years behind them. No one believes for a minute that the Western powers can spare them this misfortune at the very outset. So it seems almost logical to expect that this small country would favor her most serious threat as a means of protection. However, this choice is not an easy one to make, and therefore the mental anguish increases. The reason is simple. In the last elections, only 38% of the vote was communistic. But the communists usurped power, wrote a new constitution. And wrote a new constitution. This has been done by careful and prodigious infiltration into the action committees of the labor unions. The result being that either a man conforms or he is jobless. This is not utter fantasy. Many people told me that they will vote with the government only to secure their own jobs, and these statements were made in greatest secrecy. To make matters worse, even worse, there is an acute food shortage due to the last year's poor crop. To cope with this situation, rigid controls have been levied, and they're so adequately enforced that rationing really works. To make this possible, strict policing is necessary, and this adds to the general state of fear. Another recent occurrence has caused more distrust. Officers of the army who previously fought for the British are being released from service without explanation. This information I did not obtain from reactionary newspapers. All of these factors, topped with the mysterious death of Masaryk, who the people loved, adds up to the present state of fear in the hearts of the people. However, it is doubtful that communism, to a great extent, Czechoslovakia, like most European countries, has operated under a partial system of socialization for many years, so this experiment is not completely new. On the other hand, the alternative to communism is not singularly attractive, meaning, of course, anything that the Western powers have to offer. The imperialistic control exercised by the U.S. with its ERP, that stands for European Recovery Program, the one-sided foreign policy of Great Britain, Palestine, for example, the undemocratic purge of so-called communists in the States, that is the beginning of the McCarthy period, and the present policy of rebuilding Germany and Austria are all potent expressions that foster distrust to any freedom-seeking people, especially the Czechs. They did not drive all the Germans out of the Sudetenland after the war to have the Western powers make Germany strong once again. One more factor should be kept in mind. It was the Russians who liberated this country from the yoke of German terror, and the Russians who treated them with kid gloves and honored them. It is Stalin's picture that hangs in every restaurant and public place, with those of Beneš and Masaryk. Since the liberation in 1945, it is the Slavic language to which the Czech tongue is more closely related, and not one of these points are psychologically insignificant. By close analysis, therefore, it becomes increasingly difficult to arrive at definite conclusions. We can only clearly see that the Czechs are fearful and that this fear stems not from communism in theory, but from world insecurity, a position which perhaps gives them little alternative but to seek protection, or at least complacently accept it from those who might otherwise be their most serious and immediate threat. May the 30th, my plane winged into Frankfurt Airport, and from the air I could see bleak and dreary, half-destroyed town. However, aside from the appearance of things, the crowd at the airport might well have been at LaGuardia. It seems there are more Americans than Germans in Germany. The first evening was spent at the home of Abe Cohen, District JDC Director, at which time I was given an orientation, so to speak, on problems that are peculiar to the German situation. From the beginning, it is easy to see that all is not rosy. After a good American breakfast for a change, Mr. Yantee, spelled Yantee, and I set out to visit Seilsburg, spelled Seilsburg. This is a camp of 2,600 people, similar to most camps, and of average standard. Like other groups, the people here are, for the most part, in good health. Many of them work either in camp administration and services or in cooperation in cooperatives, which produce for JDC warehouses or work in the community, or JDC warehouses or work in the communities. Many people, especially the younger ones, are learning trades under the auspices of ORT. Of course, the ideal situation would be if every employable person would work in some manner. The statistics indicate that a great number of people are employed, but these figures do not tell that some of this employment is partial and exists in name only. This pretense has resulted from the attempt of IRO and JDC to encourage more self-dependence. They have thus set up special categories whereby people receive supplementary rations in return for their productive efforts. In some cases, this has encouraged activity, but in other cases, it has resulted only in more black market operators with this high-value supplement. This problem is not simple or seemingly curable. It will be referred to under discussion of Germany in general. Knowing that any displaced person is free to settle in the German community, I asked some people why they didn't choose this to crowded camp life. The answers were many faceted, but all came down to the point that the psychological block against living anywhere in Europe has become too great to easily overcome. Certainly many people have found places in the community. It is estimated that almost one half of all Jews in Germany live in the community. They receive the basic German ration, which to the present has been 1,500 calories, which is less than the IRO ration of 2,000 calories. It is possible for this to be supplemented by applying to the local Jewish committee called the Gemeinde, who in turn passes the case on to joint for approval. In this instance, qualifications are based only on social categories, that is, pregnancy, lactating women, children, medical cases, and so forth. We do know that this system has not been efficient. Favoritism plays a great and unfortunate part. Delays in the chain of OKs often discourage the applicant, and the fact that many social categories are not permanent states all adds up to an insufficient and cumbersome community relief setup. Therefore, these people are probably, in fact, definitely worse off than the camp dwellers. and with housing almost impossible to obtain, it is understandable why the displaced person will not dissolve himself, almost impossible to obtain. It is understandable why the displaced person will not dissolve himself by filtering into the German economy. Because these people would no longer be eligible for IRO, that's International Refugee Organization, aid, which cannot be ignored. Furthermore, it is not with the scope of joint's intention or capacity to become political in nature, which in effect this procedure would be. Anyhow, it is extremely doubtful, according to most sources, that the DP will willingly respond to demands that he become part of the German economy. If the problem resolves to this, then the state of the world will have reached unprecedented depths. Paragraph, social note. I had the very great pleasure of spending the evening with Major Hyman of the U.S. Army. His secretary and Abe Cohn's secretary, Daphne, a South African. The major has been assistant advisor on Jewish affairs for 3 years and knows the situation backwards and forwards. I was told many times that he is worshipped by every DP for his sincere efforts on their behalf. As for me, I found him a man of great ideals put into practice. Daphne is a very attractive girl, an excellent dancer, was greatly upset over the election results in South Africa. Every person familiar with the political situation has indicated the same discomfiture and doubt for the future of South Africa. I found in her another of the many women of Europe who puts much greater emphasis on the practice of her ideals than on simply talking about them. We spent the evening at Kronberg Castle, the scene of the $10 million jewel theft. The officers don't spare the horses in fixing themselves up in grand style. This was apparently an officers' club. June 1st. Visited Bensheim, a typical camp with lots of faults. The main complaint here being a protest by a few against the persuasive method used by ardent pro-Zionists. I inquired further into this problem and found that the social pressure tactics used by these people are in no way endorsed by any official. And what's more, it has progressed beyond logic, because the new state cannot yet absorb all of those desirous of Palestine, let alone take everybody into the camps. This is merely the result of an unavoidable zest on the part of a few ardent proponents. When approached on the subject, their claim is that they seek a united front on the subject in sincere hope that this will favorably affect public opinion and thereby world opinion. From the camp, we went to Lindenfels, a children's center. As usual, conditions were excellent. Nothing is too good for the children, and even more, those I spoke with said that they were happy. The director explained that 25% of the 100 children there were not orphans, but the parents preferred their living in a home to a displaced persons camp, where they are exposed to so many distasteful facts of what is, in essence, slum living. Our car broke down as we were leaving, so we had to go to IRO headquarters for assistance. While our car was being repaired, I had a conference with the IRO doctor in charge of the district. He complained of many inadequacies in the IRO medical service, which he attributed to red tape, something to expect in any large organization. For instance, he has no intramuscular needles, while there is an oversupply of 3-inch intrathecal needles and subcutaneous needles. It is in such cases as these, and there are many, that JDC fills the vast gap between failure and success of the relief program. This gentleman readily acknowledged this was a fact. The medical short list I listed as following: alcohol, vaccine, cod liver oil, and intramuscular needles. June the 2nd. The overnight train ride from Frankfurt to Munich was very interesting. This is attributable to a very lush, (inebriated) captain from counterintelligence. Some of his stories that most assuredly would not be told without the influence of alcohol did not cease to astound me. The same shocking truths that are so rampant throughout military government, especially with regard to rebuilding the German and Austrian state as a bloc against Russia. More will be said about this under a discussion of Germany in general. My arrival was well received, even though it was an early hour, by Mr. Kempner, in charge of VIPs, very important persons. Formerly a Russian correspondent for military government, he took me to see Mr. Haber, director of joint for the American Zone. He and his brother, Dr. Haber, I am told, have done a great deal to better conditions of Army, IRO, and JDC in Germany. My first official visit took me to a camp called New Freimann. This is doubtless one of the best. Very well organized, including a day nursery for children, as beautiful as one might find anywhere. Ort schools, fire company, and so on. Here, too, as in many other establishments, food of great value lies unused in the storeroom because of continental idiosyncrasies. This is hard to combat. For example, baby foods of great value to us are not used by the Continentals. That means continental Europe. The old idea that anything in cans does not possess nutrition comparable with fresh foods is difficult to dispel. In some instances where local nurses or doctors have promoted use of such items, the mothers have become ardent proponents. But of course, sufficient and educated staff is not the general rule. I spent the evening talking to a doctor who had practiced in Russia during the middle 30s. He claims that even medicine there is subject to governmental whims. June 3rd. Today we visited a camp of 4,000 people, very much like a small town. Best of all is the hospital, which was originally German. Here is a typical instance of an overabundance of medical facilities as compared to a decided lack in other establishments, especially in northern quarters. Once again, this fault is unavoidable. Munich camps are better, and therefore personnel will not be induced into moving so as to establish some semblance of balance. One item of great interest is the small retail establishments that have sprouted. They sell anything their extra rations can acquire for them, and contrary to general opinion, most of these businesses are not extremely profitable, but they serve the purpose of interest and diversion from a very boring life. On the way to this camp, we passed through a village having the reputation of being the first to oust all of its Jews. That was in 1937 or 38. Incidentally, this town is also the birthplace of Albert Einstein. Württemberg, Germany. After leaving the camp, Furrenwald, we stopped at a staging area for the Haganah, run by a woman of typical Palestinian optimism. She asked me to see a patient who had hurt his leg during vigorous training the day before. It was nothing serious, however. In the evening, much against inmate prejudices, I attended a German opera. It was Barber of Seville, and it was very good. And it was sung in German. Next, some notes on the IRO. Two homes were needed for rehabilitation of the chronically ill. A JDC acquired them after IRO postponed judgment. Later, however, IRO did assume basic ration responsibility. Preventative medicine undertaken by JDC in the way of mass examination, even though IRO approved, JDC had to foot the bill. Paragraph, June the 4th. With one more day only allotted to Munich, the choice of visiting Dachau in preference to more camps, hospitals, and so forth was my own. It was not a mistake. In drenching rain, we wandered about the barracks, grounds, burial areas, hanging posts, pistol ranges, and I forgot the rain. We passed what once was an underground pond of waste, deep water, in which punished inmates had to stand until death relieved them. Then we followed the path that over 200,000 followed to their death into gas chambers. In typical sadistic humor, the building is labeled bathhouse. It includes rooms for undressing and a torture room for those who balked. There were a few who knew that they were being led to death by gas and therefore the necessity of the punishment chamber. However, I am told that most people really believed that they were in for a shower. Perhaps because the normal human mind could not and still cannot fathom such inconceivable bestiality. Even today, many survivors doubt these stories. So how can we be dismayed when unaffected people doubt or in any way question these savage practices? In the gas chambers, sealed all around, there are little windows through which the guards observed as the helpless victims perished. From this cell, a door leads directly to the crematorium. There is an old, outmoded furnace, but it could not handle the load, so eventually the Germans had to install new ones. The ashes were then used as fertilizer. On the surrounding farms. My train, the Orient Express, departed for Paris in early evening. I shared a cabin with a civilian and military government, a labor economist. From him came more distressing information about the bloody Germans. June 4th. The general situation of displaced persons in Germany is not good for many reasons beyond our control. These people living in camps are alive today because they have been clever and resourceful. And this innate ability has manifested itself beyond the laws of society in many cases, so that black marketing, although not generalized, has become prominent enough to create disfavor among the military forces and German population. This hundling, as it is called, has grown from the innocent exchange of some relief items, as food and cigarettes, which have extremely high market value. Since the Jewish DPs receive more and better supplies than other dependent groups, it has been possible for some of them to build rather large businesses. The military government cannot cope with this situation, and therefore, the usual result is more anti-Semitism. The legal department of JDC, therefore, has a major task, protecting the rights of Jewish DPs, who would ordinarily be unscrupulously handled. Because this type of business has proved lucrative, and because these already demoralized people subconsciously feel themselves beyond the law, any attempt to require them to embark on constructive work is almost beyond hope under present circumstances. There are other contributing factors since liberation. The DPs have been sitting on their baggage, expecting that immigration is just around the corner. The changing events in Palestine has repeatedly raised and lowered their hopes and expectations, and therefore made any far-sighted program difficult to conceive. At the present time, most youth expect to leave for the Haganah as soon as they can be taken. And this represents an extremely large group. Older people, not destined for Palestine immediately, are as a whole unwilling to work for Germans or for the reconstruction of Germany. And this is understandable. Many of them feel that they are beyond the point of learning a new trade, and in many cases their own skills are not required in DP camp life, so that relatively few of those not already involved are desirous of doing any type of temporary cooperative work that will not pay as well as their black marketeering. Now, to put a stop to these practices is desirable, but not feasible, since the basis for their operations, that is, relief supplies, cannot be carelessly cut off. If this were done, many hardship cases would result, and the staff required to investigate the legitimate claims would be unusually expensive. And furthermore, it isn't even available. An attempt to combat this problem has been made by JDC, so that only special categories, such as children, pregnant and lactating women, medical cases, people working in camp services, receive these supplementary rations. Even with this, 85,000 out of about 120,000 DPs still are eligible. Thus, a state of dilemma exists. Anti-Semitism is growing in leaps and bounds, not because it is justified, but these few bad cases are enough to plant the seed in minds which are fertile, and there are few that are not. To complicate matters even worse, if that seems possible, some Jews are now becoming reluctant to leave their present situation, mainly because the news in Palestine is discouraging and more hardship is difficult for them to accept. Especially since remaining here means, in many instances, a relatively easy life with the necessities provided. Anything better seems too unrealistic, and remembering the mental and physical degradation behind them. This is a state of demoralization quite different from that seen at the time of liberation from concentration camps. If this situation continues, the remnants that have been saved will be of little value. Unfortunately, much of the blame for the present state of affairs rests with the relief organizations and military government. Obviously, if 2 years ago, adequate and interesting work projects had been provided, the self-dependence and mental attitudes would be considerably better. Then it was not possible. First of all, staff is extremely scarce to the extent now that there are only 3 public health nurses on the JDC, Americans' own medical staff. There should be 10. Secondly, no one has ever planned on a long-term basis. It has always been the hope that the displaced persons would be dissipated by immigration. Thirdly, IRO seems to have very little human interest in the problem. They operate on strictly supply basis, not as a social agency. Fourthly, the Army similarly treats the situation as a burden to be tolerated only as long as necessary. This fact is borne out by the latest paradox, that is, the Army's willingness to return property to the Germans, which 3 years ago was requisitioned for the unfortunate survivors of fascistic sadism, who then were beyond doubt our country's allies. Last of all, America's foreign policy has contributed considerably to the general muddle, to the extent that many Jews who were formerly anti-communistic are now looking to Russia as a friend. The reversal of our State Department on Palestine smothered for many of them any flicker of faith in the U.S., supposedly their guardian and protector. The ultimate solution cannot come from more relief and more charity. The problem now is at a point where salvation is in the hands of the governments. The resulting ill effects have somehow been surprisingly minimal. The disturbing cases mentioned here are in the minority, and in many instances are greatly exaggerated. But there is no guarantee that the demoralization will not spread and perhaps become permanent. June the 5th, Germany. Leaving Germany was a pleasure. Each day there I became more and more embittered by the Germans and the general atmosphere that pervades. Their warped natures are evident from the minute of arrival, starting with a fight among the porters for one of an American customer, big tippers, all of 2 cigarettes. For my bags, a young, sharp-faced blonde, about 30, fought with a gray, decrepit man having no inhibitions over the age difference. But that is typical. They even hate each other. There is rarely an occasion one will not run down the other to an American. They have no scruples with regard to bettering themselves at the expense of another. The job of teaching hate was well done. It cannot be expected, knowing this, that the German attitude has changed toward a Jew or an American. All of the American and British public opinion polls bear this out. The discouragement of a few old-time liberal professors and their claim that the attitudes in the institutions of higher learning have not changed is further proof. Recently, a newspaper in a town near a DP camp issued a story favoring DPs. The next day, the editor was deluged with anonymous letters accusing him of Semitic tendencies and of being a traitor to his country. If this were completely a matter of ignorance, it might possibly be rationalized. But the obvious insincerity, selfishness, and prevarication makes their contemptibility even greater. For instance, the people living around Dachau, where 250,000 Jews were cremated, deny knowledge of the existence of such practices. However, the smoke was visible for miles around, and the ashes of the burned bodies were eagerly sought for fertilizer. The inadequacy of this denial is realized when these same people are accused of participation in these horrible crimes. Then they invariably blame someone else and offer no denials. The answer is made to fit the question, with only one purpose in mind: to exonerate themselves. The irony does not stop, but becomes more aggravating. A man from military government told me of a recent meeting at which the German representatives had the nerve to complain that it is unfair for the basic ration of the DP to be more than that of the German people, insisting that the German ration be raised. He confronted them with the questions of how much relief they had ever extended to any other war-ravaged or depleted country. Everybody knows the answer to this. Not a cent to China or India or Ethiopia. Or did they even concern themselves about each other? At present, there is a typhoid epidemic 100 kilometers from Munich. The same town suffered... I couldn't read my handwriting, but it goes, the same town suffered last year. Military government advised the mayor what to do about the water supply. He did nothing. Inoculations were also advised, and he set the example by refusing. Now 600 cases of this dread disease are reported. But care and assistance in any form is not forthcoming. No other community has volunteered its doctors or nurses, or even more alarming is the unwillingness of employers to release trained nurses on a leave of absence basis to care for the sick. If one does volunteer, she loses her job. Military government has taken some steps to prevent this, but the situation is not much improved. What could be more typical of Aryan bestiality, that's a question, what could be more typical of Aryan bestiality? Coldness and hate and indifference cannot find a stopping point. A DP camp is located near this town and is blamed for the infestation of the water supply. The fact that the camp is located below the town, in addition to the fact that 90% of these people are immunized and no cases have been found there, matters little. Scientific truths never have and never will hold water in the midst of bigotry. Incidentally, this DP camp happens not to be Jewish. Every official with whom I spoke, military government, JDC, or intelligence, had more to tell. The examples are manifold. Unfortunately, any attempts to democratize Germany are failing hopelessly. The invincibility of the German mind, as well as our approach, are both responsible, and it seems that little can be done about it. It is probably a known fact that we are, in effect, rebuilding the German state. The general policy is one of be nice to the Germans. The outcome of the recent conference on rations mentioned earlier will be raising the calorie level to equal that of the displaced persons, that is 2,000 calories. This is one instance of giving in to their requests. The most recent development, inconsistent with any semblance of justice, is the willingness of the army to return houses to the Germans in which displaced persons are now living. After the war, the attitude was quite different. Then the DP, the displaced person, the individual whose plight could be laid at the feet of the German militarism, was given first preference. In the intervening 2 or 3 years, not only has nothing been done to improve this plight, but the procedure is obviously in the wrong direction. One military governor told me that in some instances we have gone so far as to use former SS men in British intelligence, and in most instances, denazification is a matter of form, depending on how useful the individual can be for the occupying government. Another frustrating fact is that recently, German reparations have been curtailed so that these assets may be directed to rebuilding German Western industry. Incidentally, it is not generally realized that this same industry has a functioning capacity of 80% of pre-war levels. Bombing was but a dent. In fact, 1944, the year of the heaviest Anglo-American bombardment, German production was at an all-time peak. Knowing such facts, it is increasingly difficult to predict what the outcome will be. The reason, at least on the surface, for our policies is not so difficult. Actually, we are countering the Russians. In fact, today the Russians announced a welfare program for German workers, which will give 150,000 warm meals and 20% wage increase. This was done over the heads of four-power control and is only one of many such gestures. The Germans are actually being wooed from both sides. The fear now is that immediately following the setup of a Western German government, the Russians will counter with an all-German government in Berlin, the propaganda line being a unified Germany. Its appeal should not be underestimated. At least, it is not by the Western powers, and therefore we are turning the other cheek. This is the state of affairs where West meets East. Hitler's dream to divide the Allies is rapidly becoming a reality. We stand to gain nothing, and the Russians only a very little for a very short while. Meanwhile, the Germans benefit, and the most important problem of all, the humanitarian one, is being pushed further and further into obscurity.